I'm Gab, he's Jules, cloudy skies over West London. But it's okay, because there is actually a lot going on, even though it is international break. We're going to talk about the U.S. winning the Nations League
again
for the third straight time. How about that? We'll be talking about the Dani Alves case and Neymar. We've got the playoffs, which are tomorrow night for the final UEFA Euro 2024 places. And hey, look, since we're all about plugging and cross promotion, Ben Davies, who is
our own Ben Davies,
who was a guest on our latest Gab and Jules Meets. He's playing in them. But we got to talk about these two big prestige friendlies.
Yeah.
Italy against Ecuador. No, I'm just kidding. we'll get to England and Brazil in our second segment. But I got to talk about Germany and France. Because France, runners-up at the last World Cup. I think they might have won the one before that, if I'm not mistaken. Against Germany, everybody agreed, yeah, Germany's a basket case, not gonna, they don't know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. Instead, this looked like a pretty comprehensive German performance. We saw some new faces, Mittelstadt and Andrich as well, who of course got books. We saw a convincing performance beyond Toni Kroos's return, obviously. So I gotta ask you, like, is this Deschamps saying, like, haha, let me trick these Germans into a false sense of security. Let me concede a goal after 7 seconds. let me look like cack and lose at home. And then we'll surprise them at the Euros.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that's the case.
French tactics? No.
Maybe, although he did just never show up, really. It was not all bad. The kind of second half of the first half was a bit better. When you concede after 7 seconds, such a nice goal, clearly worked on our training. There's still it's different to do something at training on your own, on your training ground with no fans, no opposition, than then to do it in a game like that. Credit to them.
And it's different when Bryce Samba's in goal and not Magic Mike either.
Well, the shot deflected. I don't think anybody would have saved it anyway.
The shot's from a million miles away.
It's still deflected. I don't think anybody could have saved it. But well played for Germany. Crosses, ball, verts, a shot. Nothing to say about that. After that, I think you're a bit dizzy if you're France for a bit of time. And then the second half, the Germans just destroyed them. Really, they were playing with them. Verts, Musiala so good, overloading the midfield like they did with Gundogan, Kimmich at times, Kroos, of course, and Andrich. It was just very, very good from Germany and very, very bad from France.
I'm curious about to take your point about the first goal, goals change games and whatever. On the other hand, this is a friendly, right? You're there to execute. You're there to improve your mechanism. Some of the more fringier players in the France squad are there to impress Deschamps. Mm-hmm. If I'm Deschamps, I say, like, all right, you can see after 7 seconds. Who cares? I want to see you play. I want to see you play properly. And I don't expect you to get worse as the game continues. And you can't tell me, oh, I'm freaked out by this goal. But, you know, that's fine. That's fine in the Champions League. That's fine in a knockout tournament. That's fine, in a league when you might take more risk change. But there's no reason for France to change the way they play just because they go a goal down for 7 seconds. So I can't give them an alibi. What I noticed especially, which really kind of surprised me, is I got the point that obviously Germany overloaded the midfield, which is one way to play, and that's fine. But it looked to me like the fullbacks were just getting... For France, we're just getting overrun, maybe getting no help from the players in front of them, which is an ongoing thing. Surely that's a concern that Deschamps not going to like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they expected Wirtz and Musiala to really play well, because they didn't really, and Mittelstadt came forward a bit more than Kimmich on the other side. I just think tactically there was an issue with the way they set up, and maybe the way they should have reacted to what Germany were doing with the midfield especially, because they were always overrun, they were always one man short somewhere, they could not be aggressive, they could not be close to them enough. And I don't think, I mean, Koundé is not really a right back, we know that, and this is one of the issues. Number 9 and right back is currently the two main issues that I think Deschamps has to sort out before the Euros. Who you play at right back, who you play as a centre-forward.
Centre-forward, you play the handsome one, not the one who plays for Milan.
Well, Thuram plays really well at Milan, at Inter, but as a front two, on his own, it might be different. Giroud is 37. Can you really play at the Euros with a 37-year-old, with the intensity and everything? And Deschamps loves Colomwani. So that's, those are your three options. Or you move Mbappe centrally, which is also possible.
But that's the thing where at France, there's always so many options. However you want to do this. Whenever you see a problem, it's like, you know, oh, Koundé sucks. Okay, fine. But then you've got Pavard you can bring back. You know, there's a whole bunch of things you can do, right?
And then at least center forward, you've got good options. At right back, you don't have any good options. Pavard doesn't want to play right back anymore. He doesn't even play at club level anymore.
Okay, fine. Koundé, then you can go and watch the Euros on television.
That's what will happen. I think Pavard will end up playing a right back.
You know,
and Griezmann missing on Saturday was a massive, massive, massive loss.
All right, Griezmann, come on. Excuses. All right. No, it was a loss, but come on. You can't see, with all the players you have.
He's the second
you
most
are
important
blessed.
Player in that team after Mbappe.
We're going to move to Germany in a second, but I want to resolve this Griezmann thing. Okay, look. I know that Griezmann is very important, was very important at the Euros, and is, you know, you could say, you think you just said there, France's second most important player, whatever. I can't have this, though, as an alibi for a performance like this, and I hope Deschamps didn't put it forward, for the simple reason that you cannot, with all the players you have, I expect you to find a solution. I expect you to find a play, to have a way of playing where Griezmann's not there. It's not like France stopped functioning.
No, but that's not what I said. It's just that without him, the team is not as good and not.
But that's on Deschamps.
Yeah, but it's like if you lose Mbappe, you just don't. You can replace him by another player, but who won't have the same skill set, won't have the same influence on the team, won't have the same talent, won't have the same experience, and this is it. So Deschamps tries Zaire Emery, who's 18, who's an amazing talent, a prodigy. But in a game like that, especially when your team is not playing well, then he's always going to struggle. But Fofana would have struggled, Camavinga would have struggled. On top of that, I don't know why Rabiot started, because he'd only played 30 minutes since coming back from an injury with Juventus. He was not ready to start a game of this caliber with that intensity. He was not ready, and he played the whole 90 minutes, which was even more baffling than
they love
him starting. So I think it's not just the Griezmann issue on himself, but what didn't work really was the midfield. And part of the reason why it didn't work was also because Griezmann wasn't there.
I want to move it on to Germany. There's a ton of negativity, and then all of a sudden you flip a switch and like, we beat France. So now we're really good. I know it's not going to work like that.
They beat us 8 months ago, 2-1, and after that they were bad again. So,
however, this was also a really good performance. Very I don't good. Remember the game from 8 months ago, whether Germany played well or whether it was just, you know, Deschamps screwing the pooch.
It was a bit similar, but
The Toni Kroos angle, it seemed like a very un-Nagelsmann-type move. In the same way, I'd argue that Andrich being in there, for those who haven't or are unfamiliar with him, although you should be familiar with him because he plays for the league leaders in Germany, he looks... I'm not saying he is a thug, but he looks like a thug. He obviously wants to cultivate that image with his haircut and everything. He's got a bit of the Arturo Vidal in him in terms of look. Doesn't have Vidal's technical ability, but just feels like a throwback. There was a stat, I tweeted it out. I was shocked. He's in his career, he's gotten a yellow card every three games, which is, I think, it's pretty hard to do for a normal person. And of course, he got booked in this game too. Is Nagelsmann trying to do what we would stereotypically assume are un-Nagelsmann type things to try to find solutions? Because
I just think he needed Kroos to come back in midfield to be able to dictate the pace of a game that Kimmich can't do, Goretzka can't do.
The other one? The one who's supposedly so good, who can dictate the pace of the game when he plays for Manchester City, or when he played, and supposedly does so at Barcelona occasionally? Gundogan?
But Gundogan plays higher up on the pitch.
Yeah, anyway. I know. He plays. He hasn't played his whole career higher up the pitch.
No, but now he can't do it anymore in front of the back four. So you had to find another solution.
I'd like to know, though, why. Can you explain this to me technically? Because
I don't think he can run anymore.
Well, that's fine. Does Toni Kroos run a lot?
Toni Kroos runs more than Gundogan when he sits
deeper?
And this is more a natural position, I think, for Kroos than it is for Gundogan anyway. The thing is, if you start Kroos, you have to put next to him, Goretzka Kroos wouldn't work. Kimmich Kroos wouldn't work anymore.
You need to put a runner.
Exactly. You need to put Andrich, who will do the dirty work in a way, who will do the running, who will do the being aggressive, who will do the, I recover the ball, I give it to you, and then Kroos can do everything that he's so good at, really, the creativity from deep, all the organization, everything. And then if you put Kimmich at right back, who inverts regularly, as we saw against the French, especially in the second half, if you put Musiala and Verts, who're going to drop deep, a little bit deeper between the lines, then suddenly that midfield is unplayable because they don't lose the ball. They always have an extra man. They always have an overload somewhere. And then maybe at some point against some deeper block, and let's see what they do on Tuesday night, they might lack a bit of pace on the wings from what Sané can bring you or Gnabry can bring, those kind of players. But I think Musiala and Verts are so good, especially with Havertz as a nine, that they can unlock any defense.
Havertz as a nine. I like that idea. Gee, I think we've spoken about this before.
But having seen them against Austria, for example, in November, where they were so bad, and even against Turkey, where they were really, really average. And then this game, I was like, wow, what happened in the space of 4 months?
Well, let's see what happens in the space of 4 days, because I'll see it personally, because I'm going to be in Frankfurt on Tuesday for Germany against the Dutch. And if you're going to be there too, Frankfurt, by the way, where I live, I spent 4 happy years of my childhood.
You did, that's right.
Frankfurt.
Yeah, it's a bit home. Yeah. It's a bit home for you.
Wow, well, it's much easier. Germany can be a home if you're not German. But do hit me up. Do come say hello if you're going to be in Frankfurt.
This should be a good game, considering the rivalry, considering, you know, everything. The Dutch are not very good, as we saw against Scotland, even if they won 4-0.
You're going to be trolling the Dutch so hard. Oh, it's really funny, because I'm sure for like most normal people in Europe, it's really hard to support Germany if you're not German. On the other hand, given you love being vindicated whenever the Dutch screw things
exactly.
up.
Exactly. I'm all for Nagelsmann.
The other prestige friendly at Wembley, England against Brazil. First time out for Dorival Jr. And first international goal for Endrick, just minutes into his debut.
Incredible 17-year-old. I mean, the youngest to score since Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, R9. Incredible. He should probably have scored a second right at the end. Maybe he was still too excited and too happy by the goal that he scored. Very opportunistic way. I don't think he will score a simpler goal in his international career, because the shot by Vini is kind of parried onto him by Pickford. I thought Brazil were really good, I have to say, considering it was a mixed team because of all the players out for Dorival Jr. It was his first game in charge. They could have scored 3-4 goals. They hit the post. They had big, big chances that they missed. And they actually didn't concede much defensively. So I was really, really happy for them.
Yeah, I thought defensively they held up really well. Yeah. Now, obviously, like, and it's not just that there was no Harry Kane. Obviously, Watkins isn't, I think we can say this, won't be offended, isn't the goal scorer that Harry Kane is. But, and also doesn't have the characteristics of a Harry Kane. And I do wonder about that a little bit, in the sense that the Harry Kane dropping off, which I think he does more for England. Well, he does it quite a bit for Bayern now, too, in certain situations. But if you replace him with a guy who's not going to do that, because that's not his skill set, you need to make adjustments. And now I just wonder...
Is that the Bellingham in number 10 adjustment, would you say? So you play higher up the pitch?
Yeah, you always have, just because your patterns of play are going to be different. If you know there's never the threat, if I'm the center back picking up Watkins, I know that if he decides to drop off, I'm like, okay, I can pass him on easily to a defensive midfielder, for example, because I know that, hey, all right, you want the ball between the lines, Watkins? Fine, you're not going to do anything with it. Yeah. Or you're not going to do the damage that Harry Kane can do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which conversely, at the same time, obviously I'm going to be much more engaged in delivering the ball behind. The wingers as well, the people who feed the ball behind, if Watkins is there, you know, Harry Kane, I'm saying he's slow, but like needs a certain type of ball for him to be able to use his strength to get to it if you're going to play the ball behind. Watkins, obviously, you know, has more acceleration than Kane does. So it's these little tweaks, and I do wonder a tiny bit. It looks like in the next game we're going to have Ivan Toney, whose skill set is again very different from both Kane and Watkins. He's going to play against Belgium. And I'm just wondering if this is something that Southgate can be dealing with, should be dealing with.
Yeah, I guess he needs to make a selection anyway for the Euros. He can't take Watkins, Toney and Kane, so he has to choose. There's other positions, I think, where there's also question marks.
Why can't he take three forwards?
Well, three for a system where you play just with one up front seems a bit luxurious.
I would suggest, actually, that especially with the five substitutions and with 26 people, I think you have to take three center forwards.
Okay, maybe.
Over 7 games, because you get one injury or one suspension, which over 7 games is entirely possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, with Rashford in the squad as well, I'd be surprised if...
Rashford, who's so effective down the middle. And
no, it's not the point, but if he's to play 5 minutes there or there, I would keep a place for another position than having three number nines.
One more attacking midfielder that he's not going to play in favour of defensive midfielders.
Or maybe like defensively, because defensively clearly seems the issue. I mean, I thought they were all over the place. I mean, John Stones plays in a way for his club that is obviously very different for the national team, and I think he struggles to play in that team because they have zero structure defensively or offensively. Maguire...
Zero structure.
I think it's catastrophe. Yeah. It's really a catastrophe. And Maguire should go on holidays instead of going to Germany, or he can go in Germany on holidays if he wants to, but not the Euros. And then I said it, I will say, and I tweeted it on Saturday night, that Phil Foden never touched the ball in 90 minutes in the Brazilian box is baffling to me. I found that ridiculous.
He didn't touch the ball very much at the last Euros either, did he?
I just don't understand how your most informed player can be not put in the right environment to take your team and impact the game. And for me, that's all on Southgate. But you know, I don't like Southgate. So I was just not surprised by anything I saw on Saturday. And Belgium are not really good at the moment. We saw against Ireland. I still think that it would be tricky for England against them on Tuesday.
Final word on Southgate. He was asked, I think it was before the Brazil game, he was asked about rumors linking him to Manchester United. He said that, look, you know, he would be really, really disrespectful for him to talk, blah, blah, blah. He's got a contract. He's like, I've never talked to another club while I've been under contract. Which, I got to say, like, yeah, maybe you haven't because you've only had 2 jobs in your entire life.
Yeah.
But it is pretty freaking normal for people.
Exactly.
I'm sure,
and he's, you know, he's been contacted already, you know.
I understand why he said that. What I'm curious about, though, his contract isn't up at the end of the Euros. His contract is up
in December.
Why?
Have they done it just the end of the calendar year? Maybe, which a few do, to be fair. I think Deschamps' contract goes to maybe December 2026. Maybe it's easier when it's with the federation, that it's not a season. I don't know. It's a good question.
It seems like a natural break to do it. You know, either you do the thing that they always do in the past, where just before the tournament they extend it for another 2 years.
Yeah.
The old Fabio Capello trick.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just seems a little odd. But Gareth, we like you. I think people would understand if you did get a call from Manchester United. I don't know if you did. I think a lot of United fans probably would be very split on Gareth Southgate. Mm-hmm. It's okay to say, look, I'm not going to talk about it. I have a contract until this day. But don't go down the whole respect route, especially because it comes and bites you in the backside. If somebody comes out and says, oh, yeah, you know, I spoke to Gareth Southgate's lawyer, or agent, representative on behalf of Manchester United, then you kind of look like a tool.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't. Jules, let's just devote a little more time to Brazil.
Yeah.
Because they are Brazil, after all. You mentioned this before. It was kind of a mixed squad. And look, England were a mixed squad, too. There were important players missing. But in terms of drawing conclusions on Brazil, and it's Dorival has just arrived, very little time with the players. What I thought was interesting is when I look at the starting 11, if you were to say, like, every Brazilian player in the world is available, how many of these guys would I expect to be in the starting 11? I wouldn't have expected very many.
No.
You know, looking up this, obviously the goalkeeper is not going to be there when Alisson and Ederson are available. I think Danilo will start.
Yeah.
Bruno seems to be in the mix. I hadn't seen much of him before, but he looks at the back. He looked reasonable.
Yeah, but Marquinhos.
There are better options, right?
Yeah.
Beraldo, you're going to tell me, he's made quite the splash, but he's still a young player, right?
He's young, but I think inexperienced. He's so good.
I think he's going to go to the Copa America, but he's not a nailed-on starter by any stretch, right? Wendell, I feel like I've seen a ton of him with Porto recently, but...
Yeah, but he did well again, like he did against Saka in the 2 games with Porto.
But again, this is a position where you have options. This is a guy clearly fighting for first place in the side. The packet, assuming he doesn't get banned for match fixing, the packet, I would assume, will start. Bruno maybe should start. I'm not sure he will start.
Yeah, Bruno will start. And Casemiro will just replace Joao Gomez, who was good as the enforcer, the Andrich role, but if Casemiro is fit, Casemiro slots in that team.
The front three were Vinicius, Rodrigo, and Rafinha. Again, I know Dorival, as we'll talk about later, has had 25 different jobs in his career. So I can't say I've seen enough about him to know what his vision is. On paper, Vinicius is nailed on. I'm not sure either Rodrigo or Rafinha. I think they're going to go. They'll be in the mix. But they do have other options.
Yeah, I mean, Rodrigo can play wide for Rafinha if you want to play another number nine instead. Then Rodrigo instead. There's a few options. Although I thought they look good, they complement each other really well. I like the way Guimaraes and Paqueta control that midfield. And of course, in terms of ball handling and controlling the ball and dictating a game, they are just so good at it. And especially if they're allowed, when they are overrun, to make mistakes, to make fouls like they did. It was a lot of fouls from Brazil in that first half, and Paqueta got a yellow card after like 40 minutes where he should have had one after 10. And the rest would have been very different in a World Cup game, for example. But for now, I just like the balance of that team. And I just liked even building up from the back at times when it's not on Bruno, but starting with Beraldo. I thought there were some really good moments. They were struggling at times because England's press was decent too, especially in the first half. But once the ball gets to Bruno Guimaraes or Paqueta, it goes so quickly after that towards Vinicius, towards Rodrigo, towards Rafinha as well. And then off the bench, when you've got players like Savio, Endrick coming on with the energy, they're still maybe not ready for this kind of top level as starters. But off the bench, they're really good options.
A word on Endrick, obviously so much hype. It's weird that Endrick is like a viral YouTube phenomenon, like from the age of 10.
Yeah.
Right? And we've kind of seen him grown up. Watching him in this game, because you know, I don't get to see Palmeiras all the time, like I'm struck by the fact that he's really developing. He looks like he's a big boy.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's strong. He's like a Zaire Emery type at the same age.
In a way, though, when he first signed, when we saw those highlights of him from the youth team and stuff, when at 16, in 2 years, like it seems that like he really has grown and filled out nicely. Yeah. And I mean, this is just a digression, but I watched Kendry Páez play against Italy for Ecuador. It's the same thing. Like these are kids in that sort of 16 to 18 year range that kind of have adult bodies.
Yeah, they have. They're ready physically.
Unlike, say, I think about Lamine Yamal.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I think can still grow physically. Obviously, phenomenal footballer and stuff. And not, you know, I don't know. It just sounded really interesting. Just kind of the physical development of this next kind of generation of very young
players. Yeah, it is. And also the confidence. I mean, the maturity that he has, you could tell already. Even his face looks mature, to be fair, for a 17-year-old. And then the confidence that he has, there's a moment in the second half, I don't know if you remember, but he gets the ball, he's holding up the ball and then tries this back heel on the halfway line towards maybe Rafinha or maybe Vinicius, which is a really difficult thing to do. And in the way, by the way, it didn't work out. But to have the confidence to still do that in a game, and I think he should have taken that second chance. Maybe the fact that he didn't, maybe he was still overwhelmed by the goal that he scored, and clearly you see the celebrations, it means a lot to him. But this is maybe where he still has, and naturally to improve, is controlling the emotions, obviously. In a game like that, you score one, you need to move on straight away. You can't still be thinking about that goal that you just scored, because when another chance comes, and if the game had been 1-1, that would have been a massive chance. So in the end, it doesn't matter, and he was still super happy, and rightly so. But this is where, coming to Europe, playing for Real Madrid, I don't know how long he's going to play in his first season, how much he's going to play. But this is where I think the next big improvement will be, is that controlling the emotions during the same game, whether you miss, whether you score, all of that, which will come with experience.
I look forward to that Endrick, Joselu, Mbappe second string front line,
of course,
next season for Real Madrid. All right, enough Brazil. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Let's start with the roundup of the playoffs, or the final Euro 2024 spots.
Oh.
Jules, it's kicking off on Tuesday, will be Georgia versus Greece, Wales versus Poland, and Ukraine versus Iceland. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think let's start with Wales. Mrs. L, of course, Ben Davies, our own Ben Davies. I thought really good against Finland. They've got a lot of momentum. Those young players playing really well. Brennan Johnson, Wilson, Empadu, James. All of that, the two Jameses. So I'll go for Wales. I think in Cardiff it makes a massive difference with the supporters. And I'm not sure I trust this Polish team anyway.
Yeah, Poland, I think, player for player, I can certainly match up Wales. But I think home field advantage is going to be a big one. I think that's certainly the biggest, for me at least, of the three.
Yeah. Ukraine, Iceland, who do you have?
I've got Ukraine. I'm sorry, friends in Iceland. I like the idea of people from a small island with tons of money, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you had your clap moment. For evident reasons, I think most of the world will be backing Ukraine.
Yeah, although they were very disappointing, I thought, against Bosnia and only turned it around late in that semifinal.
Yeah, but if Israel hadn't missed that penalty, could with that Iceland
game. Yeah, I thought Iceland were really good. I mean, Albert Gudmundsson, who we've seen playing a lot for Genoa, amazing. Haraldsson Alil, amazing as well. So I think Ukraine will go through, but I don't think it'll be as straightforward maybe as a lot of people think. Georgia, Greece?
Come on. I got it. Okay. So obviously, I got to go for my Greek cousins.
Yeah.
However, I think, again, home field advantage.
I'm going Georgia. Georgia.
Willy I think Sagnol Georgia
as the manager, and Varaskelia as well over there.
Oh yeah, hey Willy Sagnol, how are you gonna mess with that? Huh?
Yeah, but I mean, he's doing really well with Georgia. Spain lost their friendly to Colombia 1-0. Is this a big deal, Gab? And did you enjoy the James Rodriguez performance?
It's not a big deal because it was an experimental side for Spain. Colombia unbeaten in ages, apparently.
Yeah,
Bahamas. He had his moments. How about that?
He turns into a prime Messi when he plays for the national team.
especially in Spain. Like, he's 33 years old now, I think, or going to be 33. He plays for Sao Paulo, didn't work out for him at Olympiacos. He's talked about, oh, maybe I'll come back to Spain. Yeah, I don't. Just leave the happy memories where they are. USA beat Mexico 2-0 to win the CONCACAF Nations League. But Jules, the story is Gio Reyna.
I mean, the final first against Mexico, we said third Nations League in a row for the US. Well done. Tyler and Reyna to score. Good performance. Really good performance, I thought, overall.
From Tyler Adams shooting from 40 yards out. Yeah.
But I like the fact that Adams and Joe kind of step up. The leaders, we said, it was a really good team on paper. I thought they played well collectively. That was good. Obviously, after the semi-final, the Greg Berhalter, Jesse March kind of argument kicked off.
Explain this.
Jesse March is now a pundit, right? I mean, I was not sure why, if he was just doing
he appeared on his spare time. My buddy Jimmy Conrad's podcast.
Right.
And, you know, he basically talked about how Gio Reyna, because he's having a really tough time and not playing at club level, not playing well, he questioned whether he should be there. Greg, who's obviously a big fan of Jimmy Conrad as well, heard it and he's like, who said Gio Reyna shouldn't be there? Did somebody say that? Like, I love kind of like the bullshit.
But is there beef before? So I tried to look for it. Was there beef before between Jesse March and Greg Berhalter? Apart from the fact that Jesse March would want his job, obviously, right?
I don't think Jesse. Okay. Jesse Marsh is a Princeton guy, so he's naturally devious and worthless. But, sorry, I'm just kidding. Not all Princeton people. No. I'm kidding now. But no, I don't think he knows. I wouldn't think that he has these negative aspirations. I think he's just talking bluntly, openly, and honestly. I think it's a fair thing to say
about
Gio Reyna.
But he's also your best player. So,
Christian Pulisic says hi. Okay.
Pulisic
hola.
And Reyna are your two best players. So, would you take, if Mbappe was not playing for PSG, Deschamps would still take him?
Yeah, no question. No, but okay, I'm not sure Deschamps is the manager everybody needs to be judged against.
No, but you see what I mean.
But yeah, no. I got no issue. I got no issue with Gio Reyna being there. And he turned in the performances.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's something sinister and devious about Jesse Marsh. Marsh's comments. I would hope not.
Italy played two friendly in the US, beating Venezuela, 2-1, and then Ecuador last night 2-0. Gab Spalletti says he's happy with the tour. Are you?
I mean,
two different 11s, right?
Two different 11s. We saw the limits. I'm not happy with the tour. I was really not happy with the first leg. They played in that Lockhart Stadium.
Which
is where Lionel Messi plays.
Yeah.
But Lionel Messi has a choice. He's got no choice. He's in Miami. There's only two stadiums there. One of them they haven't built because they're Miami building their own stadium. The other one, where the Dolphins play, too big, whatever. So he's got to play at this prefabricated weirdo piece of crap. It was like 16,000 fans. I'm like, really? You need to go all the way to Miami? I would hate to think that some people from the Italian Affair are like, oh yeah, let's spend a few days in Miami in winter. Oh, where are we going to play? Oh, I don't know. Let's play where Messi plays. 16,000 is a really poor showing. Like, you know, you're not going to sell out a big stadium.
Because I thought they were going there to kind of reconnect with all the Italian community there in the US. Well,
yes, because Miami is a historically massive Italian dome. The other one was in New York at Red Bull Arena. That was much, much better. Much nicer stadium.
Yeah.
As well, and I thought they had their moments. I thought Zaniolo played well. Pellegrini again playing well.
He has to start at the Euros.
I think he will. Defensively, a lot of things to work on. Jules, we knew that João Cancelo and Pep Guardiola don't see eye to eye, but were you surprised how hard he was on Pep, given his contract runs until 2027 when he'll be 33?
No, because I think he knows there's just no way back, right? So he went all in. Two-footed tackle, saying there were lies that City and I guess Pep lied. About him when he left, that there was all those rumors that he was a bad teammate, wasn't it? And said, yeah. No, I'm not a bad teammate. And, you know, my house got burgled and we got attacked and nobody was there for me, pretty much. That's what he says. He knows his future is not a City. He will never go back there.
I would love, you know, City, I think, have generally been pretty well run. I love who the moron is who gave him this long contract.
Yeah. FIFA revealed that Gianni Infantino's compensation for 2022, Gabby, and he got himself a nice little raise.
He did. He's going to make about $4 million, of which 1.85 is a bonus. It's kind of in line with the Confederation heads, a little more. Ceferin's on 3.3 million. Victor Montagliani at CONCACAF, 2.5 million. This is including bonuses. It is a lot less than what the people before him made. This is what they would always say. Sepp Blatter making 15 million in 2014. Jerome Valk getting bonuses of 30 million over three World Cups. And Jerome Valk, by the way, convicted felon today. Sepp Blatter now facing serious charges. A lot less than Roger Goodell as well at the NFL, who reportedly made 65 million.
Wow, okay.
Neymar and his father, who had been covering Dani Alves' legal bills and helping him pay restitution to the victim in his rape trial, say they will not pay his $1.1 million bail. Although in the meantime, reportedly, he's been released, so it means somebody's paid it.
Yeah, someone has paid it.
What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I said in the last show, didn't I, that it looked like the Neymar family were going to keep paying and paying that. And I think the backlash was so big from a lot of people, like big people in Brazil, that they kind of backtracked it and said, no, actually, you know what? We're not going to do anything. This is different now. We're not going to pay it. So that's the Neymar side of it.
Sorry, just on the Neymar side, I think he does have a point that it is different.
Yeah.
In the sense that he came, I mean, Neymar Sr., whatever you think of him, he came out and he said, look, it's one thing to pay for the help before and stuff to make sure
we believe
he
was
trial,
innocent. Once he's found guilty.
Once he's found guilty. And of course, he does have a right to an appeal.
Yeah.
But once he's found guilty, why do I need to bail him out as well?
Yeah, right? Exactly. But somebody clearly paid. Whether that's, I don't know, it's not Dani Alves himself, because as we know, his accounts are frozen in Brazil. So
and
he can't
by the way,
money.
This is why Dani Alves can't pay for money. It's not like Dani Alves like pissed away all his money.
No.
Although he pissed a lot of
probably.
It away. His bank accounts are currently frozen.
Yes.
Because he's facing other legal action over unpaid alimony and other issues in Brazil.
Yeah, for the child with his ex-wife. So that's why. So I don't know who paid it. I will repeat what I said. I think it's an absolute disgrace that he's allowed to leave jail after what he did and after being convicted, even if he's appealed. It's just not right.
Yeah. Also, for those wondering about this 1.1, I know it's not like a mystery thing, and I don't want to overstate this, but I'm assuming Dani Alves has tens of millions of dollars in assets tied up in various things. And his bank accounts may be frozen. It doesn't mean, though, that if you're Dani Alves' lawyer, you can't go to him and say, hey, look, see this, like, he's just $30 million in this account here, or $10 million, whatever it is, or this house worth X amount. Go to somebody and say, hey, can you lend me this money? It's like people who go to see bail bondsmen when they get arrested, and we'll put this on a bond so that he can be released. I agree with you. The law allows it. There's a presumption of innocence until the final degree of judgment in Spain. I do wonder. People talk about the flight risk a lot. His passport's apparently been taken away. There is this reality that if he goes to Brazil, there is no, as we know from the Robinho case, there is no extradition treaty in most cases for Brazilian nationals. So then you would have to sue for him to serve time in prison. And there's no guarantee that would be granted. So that would be a strong incentive for the courts wanting to keep him in Spain. Yeah.
UEFA have published rules regarding multi-club ownership and teams in the same competitions. Gab, some are suggesting that Manchester United and Nice could be in trouble.
Yeah, the rules are there. You can go and look them up. And they say that you can't have a controlling interest in one and the other one and the directors and this and that. But I think, as we've seen, the will from the top is that some cosmetic changes are generally all it takes. And,
yeah,
and this goes back to the Salzburg-Leipzig case,
yeah,
back in the day. Don't think United and Nice are going to have any issue whatsoever, just because of Ineos's
and Man City and Girona.
Probably even less so in Man City and Girona's case. To be honest, just given the way the cap table is there.
Yeah.
Christian Streich is leaving Freiburg after 12 years in charge, and he'll be replaced by Julian Schuster. Jules.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. I mean, when you think about where Freiburg was when he took over, I think all in all, he's 29 years at the club, something like that. Crazy. An incredible figure of German football, not just football-wise on the pitch, but also very vocal and expressive about all sorts of issues within society. So it's a great character. I think that the Bundesliga is going to lose. It was always going to happen at some point because he'd been there for so long. And I don't think he could have done more with Freiburg than what he did already, which is incredible, really, really remarkable. And then replaced by Julian Schuster, who's much younger, of course, 38, who used to play for him, then
became his assistant,
was the backroom staff as well. So Let's wish him the best. Of course, both of them wish them the best. Christian Streich in his new retired life, and Schuster in his new Freiburg manager.
And I want to say about Streich, and like, you know, again, if you don't follow the Bundesliga, it's like, ah, just some other German sounding name. And Gavin Jules are telling us he did well with a small club. I get more than that. Freiburg stand for a certain type of German club, the one where, you know, the fans decide, the ones that's so far away from the corporate world. It's a very militant club. They're the ones who want to go to games and only, you know, pay like less than 20 euros.
Yeah.
They're in line with this certain notion of German football, which I know a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, they get this all the time, like, oh, but you don't win anything, you're a loser, you don't win, and blah, blah, blah. Or like, you know, the morons often from across the pond who are like, the enterprise value of the club and 50. Like, I don't want to get into a debate about whether outside investment is good or bad, but like, he came to symbolize that. And that is really important to a lot of fans in Germany. And sometimes I wish people were more respectful of that. You can have a debate, you can make a decision what's right, but these people know what's up. And Streich was a big part of that.
Leicester City are taking legal actions against the EFL and the Premier League, Gab. They're facing the risk of being docked points by both leagues for alleged financial breaches. I mean, to sue back is pretty strong, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, this is to do also with how EFL and the Premier League, maybe when you write rules, maybe coordinate them a little bit, right? So the Premier League are taking them to task for kind of the previous 3 years.
Yeah.
They're leaving aside whether they get promoted or not, right? But obviously the Premier League know that they're coming back. So like, haha, now we can get you because you breached before. The EFL are like, wait, before you get promoted and get away from us, let us take action against you. I don't see why you can't have a coordinated set of rules here.
Yeah.
You know, which obviously different allowances for different leagues and parachute payments and whatnot and all this stuff. Like, if they overspent and broke the rules, they should be punished. I think it's as simple as that. And then maybe it should cost them promotion, right? That's something for the Football League, I think, to decide.
Yeah.
I don't know how much logic or fun it is if the Football League docked them enough points but not enough to stop them from getting promoted, and then they come up and then they start the year minus 10. Gee, won't that be fun for the Premier League, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they should take this to say, let's have similar monitoring mechanisms across the board for English football.
But why are they suing back then? Because I understand what you're saying about the breaches that they incur. But why are they fighting back that way? No, because Everton didn't do it. Forest didn't do it. They didn't sue the Premier League after being charged.
Well, I think it's partly because they're being pursued by two separate bodies here.
That's the only reason.
No, I think that's one of the reasons. I think they also feel that there's an overreach as well in terms of what was communicated to them. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not the ins and
outs. Yeah,
and also you ask me, why are they suing? Well, hey, all it takes to sue somebody is just find a happy lawyer. Like, yeah, Jules, I'll take your money. Who you want me to sue? Sven-Göran Eriksson was back in the dugout. This was emotional. Taking charge of a Liverpool Legends team that beat an Ajax Legends side 4-2. Jules, he said it was a lifelong dream, which is especially touching after his announcement that he has terminal cancer.
Yeah, incredible, really. Out on field in front of 56,000 people with the You Never Walk Alone, Steven Gerrard being there, Fernando Torres, many other former players. Jari Litmanen, captaining Ajax as well. Really, really amazing atmosphere. And what a day would have been. He said it was one of the greatest days of his life, to be fair. And I think it was a really nice touch from Liverpool to invite him after he said that his dream was one day to coach the club. And a very, very emotional day, I think, for him, for everybody there, and for his family too.
I've really been touched by how kind of the football world has rallied around him. Because let's face it, as a coach and as a person with the national team, there was a lot of controversy around him many different ways over the years, and anybody who knows the history of Senior Eriksson over the last 30 years will know what I'm talking about. But I think in terms of his personal relationships with people, I know that an Italian television station went to visit him in his home a couple months ago after his announcement, and you know, kind of sat in his kitchen, and then they solicited, they kind of like messaged a bunch of his ex-players, and he was absolutely inundated with, you know, you don't do this for somebody who you haven't touched, you don't care about. So he's always able to have that connection, whatever else you think of him.
Let's dip into the world of Joan Laporta, please, Gab. He says that Real Madrid need an exemplary sanction for the behavior and attitude of Real Madrid TV against referees. I'm guessing you agree with him?
I don't know what exemplary sanction means. I mean, like, they need a sanction that stops them from doing this. They should not be doing this.
Yeah.
This is bad. This is devious. Laporta might want them thrown out of La Liga for a year or fined $100 million so that he can pay down his own levers. I don't know. But he's right. What they're doing is wrong. I had no issue with him. On this one, Laporta and I are in agreement.
Okay. What about the next one?
Well, more Laporta. He was also asked about the European Super League, and he said, I think that it will be a very attractive competition, and I think it'll start in 2025, which, by the way, is the season after next. The resistance of two clubs like Barcelona and Madrid against those who made the stampede, I think what he means is like who stampeded away after originally signing the paperwork, and UEFA, has paid off. So now he's friends again with Madrid.
He's friends again and he's looking forward to it. Well, good for it. Good for you, Johan. Who is going to be in your competition? Remind me.
They said all the clubs that are going to be in it.
Yeah, like, we don't know.
No, it isn't like clubs from Belgium and like, I'm sure Napoli.
Switzerland.
Napoli will be there if they don't qualify for UEFA Cup.
Yeah, of course.
I think they made it very clear.
Yeah.
I want to say this about Laporta, though we love making fun of him. He did say, hey, this is just about money. He said it very clearly. Economically, this would be really good for the club.
Yeah, not if it's only Swiss clubs and Belgian clubs. The money won't be the same.
Surely. Well, yes, if it's guaranteed money.
Okay, right. And I'm sure Kylian Mbappe would be delighted when Real Madrid said to him, hey, sign with us, and next year, you're not going to play in Champions League, but you play in the Super League with Basel, Anderlecht, and Young Boys.
And you might even get to play an extra Classico, Kylian.
Yeah, exactly. And Rapid Vienna as well. Gab, Laporta also said that in addition to that 200 million euro bid for Lamine Yamal, you know, the one that came not that long ago, they are getting tons of bids for the likes of Pedri, Gavi, Fermin Lopez, Balde, Araujo, and that they don't want to sell anyone.
And De Jong too.
Ter Stegen.
What's he going to say? And obviously these are the guys you should not be selling. You know why? Because they come from the academy, except for Pedri, and most of these guys, because they come from the academy, don't make a lot of money. So Fermin Lopez, of course you don't want to sell him.
Yeah.
He's in-house, right? But then when it comes to like Ansu Fati, he's like, well, we'll see, right? We'll have to look at the numbers. I think he also said, oh, I don't expect any big signings coming in, just squad players. I think that we'll probably have to sacrifice somebody.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be one of these guys because they all have upside. I think most likely somebody like Rafinha.
It has to be a high earner, right? Because their wage bill is still way too high.
I don't think Rafinha's on an enormous wage, but he can get you some money back.
Yeah.
Although, obviously, selling youth team guys means it's that you make
profit.
Even more,
yeah.
right? Because it's pure profit. And then they're going to have to solve this João Félix Cancelo thing, which...
He said he wanted both of them to stay, and that he thought neither City or Atletico would make it difficult for them to keep them.
You know what? Like, go deal with... I think City and Atletico, obviously City, we touched upon before, right? They're on the hook for another 3 years.
Yeah.
If I'm City, I say, okay, fine, but then Gile, we cancel your contract. Because imagine if you're City, right? The guy goes to, the guy stays at Barcelona and is terrible, and Barcelona no longer want him. What did you do? Go back to Manchester City and has like, you guys pay my wages for another 2 years?
Yeah.
You don't know. You go to these guys and say, hey, we're going to cancel your contract. You can sign for them as a free agent. You become their problem. Right? Yeah. Are you willing to do that? How much money are you willing to leave on the table, boys?
Yeah.
Because I hear a lot of talk from João Félix and Cancelo and then their agents and their friends and Deco and the whole gang. But let's see action.
Yeah.
Ugly story from England, Jules. Former Norwich City sporting director Stuart Webber, who was head of recruitment at Liverpool 12 years ago, has apologized for suggesting that a number of players he's worked with, all of them people of color, like Jamal Lewis, Max Aarons, and Raheem Sterling, might have ended up in jail or, quote, something, if football hadn't worked out for them. He has since apologized. This is an extraordinarily stupid and offensive thing to say.
So stupid, so offensive. I just don't even know where to start. And I don't know how it can come in your mind saying something like this on a podcast, I think, he said.
It was a podcast because he's climbing Mount Everest for charity.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he wanted to go and promote this, and then he just talked about football. And it's good that he apologized.
Yeah, I think he could get a job at Stoke City as a new sporting director. Maybe I remember doing a radio show with him a few years ago when he was at Norwich and they were in the Premier League and he was doing well. This is a long way from there. Long way.
I mean,
disappointing.
Yeah, obviously communication, not his forte.
Yeah, definitely. Newcastle United will play Tottenham Hotspur in Australia in a friendly 3 days after the end of the season. Yeah, 3 days after Gabba. A lot of national teams are unhappy at the idea of their star players having to make a long trip around the world just before the Euros.
I think this is kind of slightly manufactured outrage here, Jules. First of all, while I believe contractually the clubs don't need to release them so they can keep them there and end of season tours and stuff we've seen in the past. Equally, if I'm a big star at Newcastle or Tottenham and I've got the Euros or the Copa America coming up this summer, or Richarlison, oh, look, I have a headache. Oh, Vicario, oh, look, I am seeing demons. Oh, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, Madison, oh, look, you know, it hurts when I wee.
So what, they're going to go to Australia with a B team, both of them?
I honestly, like, I don't see how you can actually, I mean, there's got to be a situation, a common sense situation, where certainly the clubs aren't going to force the players to go. I think it has to be a
B
team.
I just find it
and
weird.
And by the way, whatever promoter in Australia, and I'm sure they've got a lot of guaranteed money for this, I'm actually wondering, Newcastle, why are you doing this? Like, what, did sell us or whatever the hell their stupid shirt sponsor did? Did they arrange this?
I don't know, maybe. Is there another Newcastle? There's a Newcastle City in Australia as well. No, maybe
they're playing the Newcastle Jets. I don't know. look, I don't, Jets. I don't follow this, but surely there's got to be a common sense solution to this, right?
Yeah.
Besides, you just want to see Ange. You just want to see Ange.
Go in preseason.
Well, no, just have Ange go with Spurs, and then can see Ange with...
I just cannot wait for all the friends of Newcastle and Spurs players saying, hey, I'm off to Ibiza, hey, I'm off to Miami, hey, I'm off to Dubai, and you? Oh, we're on the plane to Australia, 24-hour flight, for 3 days, what?
Yeah, not just that, but when we land, what are we going to see? Jason freaking Tindall. This is our reward. Sorry, Jace. El Mundo Deportivo say Manchester United have quoted a 65 million euro asking price for Mason Greenwood, and Atletico Madrid aren't happy with that. They don't want to play it. Jules?
Well, not that much. There was a time maybe that it was worth that after everything that happened. And even if he's having a decent season at Getafe, this is not his valuation. This is not the right valuation. And if that's the money that United want, they need to be ready to keep him because he's not going to go for that price.
I believe they've this is the tricky thing for United is I believe they've triggered the extension to his contract, right? Yeah. But he'll still be entering the final 2 years. So that number's going to go down. Ratcliffe has said, like, well, every option's on the table.
Yeah, he still opened the door for him to stay.
I can't see him coming back.
He's not coming back. Well, but he's not leaving at that price either.
Yeah, so then eventually you can keep loaning him out, but eventually you're going to lose him. So you need to work out a deal.
Yeah. The friendly game between Russia and Paraguay that should have been played in Moscow on Monday night, Gav, has been cancelled following the horrific terrorist attack at a concert hall that left at least 133 people dead and many more injured.
Yeah, whatever you think about Paraguay playing Russia, given the sanctions, given what's been going on, all you can do is just spare a thought and a prayer if you're a person of faith for the victims of this, because those people were innocent people who got caught up in an awful tragedy. And I'm sure, Jules, I know this obviously resonates with you as well, because
the Bataclan.
Exactly. Let's hope that people find some closure. Catalan media are suggesting that Manchester United want to move on from Bruno Fernandes and have offered him to Barcelona. Jules, I love my silly transfer stories. This one seems extremely silly.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised you put him in, because this obviously will never happen, as we know.
Careful, somebody's going to clip this and then, you know.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you now, on, April 25th, this is not going to happen. Barcelona cannot.
It's March 25th. See what he did there?
I said March. What did you say? April 26th?
It's March 25th.
Wow, March 25th, not April 25th. This is not going to happen. I don't know why we're talking about this. One of those Catalan media invention, as we regularly read them in those newspapers. Gab, you wrote about how Brazil export more professional footballers than anyone else in the world, and yet they struggle to produce coaches. In fact, there have been only 5 in Europe's Big Five leagues in the past 20 years.
Okay, so obviously coaching in Europe's Big Five leagues isn't necessarily the benchmark of great coaching, right?
Yeah.
But there are a number of coaches from outside of the big, outside of Europe, even in the Big Five league.
Yeah.
Obviously, from Pochettino, Pellegrino, Postecoglou. Their names all begin with P. Obviously. No, just kidding. But there's just been. I was just shocked how few there have been. When you consider 1 out of every 11 footballers playing outside their home country is Brazilian, right?
Yeah.
So they export so many players. And amazingly, in the last 20 years, there have been 5. There was Vanderlei Luxemburgo at Real Madrid.
Not for long.
He had coached, and he got the job because he coached Brazil before.
Yeah.
There was Scolari, who got the job at Chelsea and didn't last long. And he got the job. He got the Portugal job before. We got it because he had the Portugal job.
Yeah.
And before that, he had the Brazil job and won a World Cup. You have Thiago Motta, who, he's Brazilian by birth, but he's been
really,
here
since
he was in Spain and Italy from the age of 16, and then France, played for Italy, went through the coaching system in Italy. Leonardo, who,
of course,
well, first of all, didn't last long as a manager, moved into front office. But another one spent his entire playing career here, got his coaching badges in Europe. Ricardo Gomes, former
PSG
Paris Saint-Germain.
Of course.
I believe the only one out of these, he won a trophy too.
Yeah. He was good at Bordeaux as well, not just PSG. But yeah, he was really good. But again, he's one of those who came as a player and then...
Did he get the French badges?
I think he's easier. Yeah, I think he's easier, maybe easier in a way. On the back of a career, like we see with Thiago Motta in Europe, to go to coaching... Then coaching in Brazil, and then to move to Europe as a coach.
So anyway, so I wrote a whole story about this. You can go and check it out, about the reasons why. And the reality is the system in Brazil is set up, let's say, not against developing quality coaches, but against developing coaches with the kind of track records that are considered good coaches. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's this incredible hire and fire mentality. And it's not just Dorival Jr. with his 25, 26 jobs in 22 years. Tite as well, 17 jobs in 30-odd years. Fernando Diniz, who is somebody who's actually doing special things, I think, at Fluminense as well. He's also had a million jobs. They don't see it as like you need to be in a job to build something, build continuity. There's a bunch of other factors as well. There's coaching licenses. There's languages. Most of them don't speak English or Spanish, and obviously that helps. So there's a lot of factors conspiring against them. I think things are starting to change a little bit, hopefully. But it's also a reminder, I think, that the game is so globalized, right? You can be an 18-year-old Brazilian fullback and you can get a gig in Europe, maybe in Portugal initially or whatever, without being outstanding. If you're a 25-year-old assistant coach who wants a gig in Europe, it's nearly impossible for you to do that. So it's even hard to kind of build your career on this side of the pond. No, know how little I care about kits and jerseys, but a lot of people do, and some in England are very unhappy with the new Nike shirt.
Yeah, that's right, Gab, because on the home, I mean, on the two shirts, but the home one, they added, I don't really know why, because they did, there was no need to add, but here on the collar, they added the St. George's Cross.
You're showing... For those who
can't see,
on the back of the collar,
on the back of the collar of their shirt, the St. George's Cross, which is obviously red on, like, with a white background.
It wasn't there before in previous kits.
Not on the collar, I don't think so. Right. But it's like, you know, the crest is the same, the colors is the same, the design is quite the same. But instead of having the cross red and white, they had it with like a purpley. They mixed the colors to
not a rainbow flag. To
no,
be,
not
to,
a rainbow
so
flag, but for unity to bring every to bring everybody yeah. together. I think that was what Nike said. Which on in a year where we would have elections, is obviously gone very political very quickly.
Although weirdly,
happy.
It was both the government and the opposition
yeah,
parties.
Everybody was on the same page.
All politicians are against it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they tried something different. I think they missed a trick by not doing a better marketing side of it. Maybe. There was maybe something else to it. Maybe they were not prepared or anticipating such a backlash.
I say, this is stupid and this is irrelevant and obvious to me, at least. People clearly care about it. I would just be extremely suspicious of politicians of both parties jumping on this, because this is a layup. This is a really easy thing to get angry about, because then you can go and you can just blame the Football Association and whoever commissioned this. And, you know, it's like a free three-pointer, because there's going to be people who don't care and there's going to be people who hate it. There's not going to be people who are like, oh, I love this design. You're offending me by telling me I can't have this design, right? So I love this political outrage. I'm not saying your thoughts aren't real. But a lot of these people are just doing this to milk it.
To be fair, I'm more mad at the price of the shirt, £130, more than what colors the St. George's Cross has. Because I think,
but for those who don't know, how much do official national team men's kits retail for normally? What? How much would it cost? How much?
I don't know. Like a club shirt is £80.
Okay, but this is your
80,
country.
Maybe 90. Yeah, but it's still not. It's not worth £130, and that's where they went too far, more than the St. George's Cross. For me, certainly for me. Gab, just so you can force, so I can force you to talk about more kit manufacturers and shirt, how big a deal is that, the fact that Germany, after 77 years, will leave Adidas to join Nike?
So people are way up in arms about this, even though it's not going to happen until 2027. Who knows if Nike will even exist in 2027? Maybe Elon Musk will buy it and dissolve it because he can.
That's true.
Look, obviously Adidas founded by Adi Dassler, hence the name, and they all told a stupid story about how, like, oh look, he invented the boots with the screw-in studs, and that's why Germany won the 1954 World Cup, and it's just wonderful.
On the rainy day for the final.
By the way, do a bit of history. I don't think that's the only reason, and there's some suspicious reasons about the 54 World Cup, too. I won't get into it. I don't want to get sued. Most of those people are dead anyway, but yeah. Anyway, this wonderful creation made for them in Germany. Look, the reality is the German FA, I mean, all the reporting I said, Nike offered them a lot more money.
Yeah, that's why.
And I think maybe Adidas felt, oh, look, you know, we got these guys. We don't need to push the boat out. And it's as simple as that. And German FA got to do what the German FA going to do. And
it's a business.
Take it up with Adidas.
Exactly.
All right, Jules, this brings us to an end. But we're going to come back on Thursday. I'm going to be back on Thursday. You won't, right?
No, sorry.
But don't worry. We'll have Stuart Robson in. We'll be talking playoff, more internationals, and looking ahead to another big weekend. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.